Koyana Gunashtish. My name is Christina Love. My pronouns are she and her. My family's originally from Ikikik Village. My grandparents are the Kellys. I was raised in Chittenden, and today I live on the Akontakuquan of the Tlingit Nation, also known as Tlingit Alni, also known as Juneau, Alaska. I work for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault as a senior specialist on intersectionality and trauma. And I'm incredibly grateful today to be joining Izzy and to be talking about domestic violence and bringing awareness to Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is October.
Thank you so much for joining me again. I'd like to just provide people with some basic points for recognizing domestic violence and helping people who are in those situations and also preventing it.
It's important, you know, that we understand the root cause of violence and then also what prevents that. But first, we'll start with identifying it. So domestic violence is a pattern of coercive, control, manipulative behavior that can be physical, but doesn't have to be physical for every relationship. The main part of it is power and control. It's rooted in power and control. And there's lots of different ways that people can enact this out through emotional abuse, through physical abuse, through psychological abuse, through economic, through other relationships like children. Any part of your life and the intimate details of who you are can be used to harm you. So that's why it's deeply unique to each individual and can be really difficult to identify. Some of the most common types of abuse that we hear about are emotional, escalating into physical. So for emotional abuse, that looks like putting people down. That looks like embarrassing them in public. That also looks like needing to know where they are all the time and not having trust in them. What I've noticed is that some of those behaviors can be perceived as this is how people care. But it's important to understand that like jealousy and controlling is not necessarily a sign that somebody deeply cares about you. And when it's more escalated, then it absolutely can be really, really dangerous. We see a lot more technology abuse. So somebody needing to have access to your phone, to your email, to your social media accounts, having the password to everything, being able to control all of those things. And the thing about domestic violence is that it doesn't happen right away. I never hear about a relationship that says, right, you know, right from the beginning, they were incredibly violent. Usually there are these phases that these relationships go through. And the one that is most recognizable is the honeymoon phase. So when you meet somebody and you have feelings for them, there's all of these chemicals that fills our body that makes us feel really good. And even that can be weaponized. Another term for that is called love bombing. So love bombing is where you are giving somebody a lot of attention, a lot of affection. Maybe you're showering them in gifts, but it is this overwhelming way of somebody connecting with another person. And these are the red flags that we really like to teach people about what a healthy relationship looks like. And then also some things that can feel really good, but that we should really watch out for. For most people who are perpetrating abuse, these become their own patterns in relationship. And like all violence, it's a learned behavior. So the really beautiful thing about that is that we can unlearn these. We can heal. We can heal from the violence that we have experienced. We can also heal from violence that we have participated in, that we have perpetuated. So some of the things I think that I would tell people as far as emotional violence goes is that just to be acutely aware of how you feel in people's presence. You know, does your partner make you feel free? Do you feel good? Do you feel lifted up? Do you feel supported? And to not ignore those. When we try and communicate our needs, what we also see in domestic violence is a lot of gaslighting. No, that's not what happened. That isn't my experience of it. Or you made me do this. I wouldn't do this if it wasn't because of this or this or this. And it's important that we understand that violence is never our fault. As those things start to escalate, a really important part of my job is helping people understand that alcohol and drug use does not cause domestic violence, that those core beliefs about our partners, that entitlement, that privilege, that comes from something else. Alcohol and drugs make those situations a lot worse. A lot of people think that it causes it because they are so closely connected. So everybody not being able to access resources, leads to using substances to end their own suffering. But in the case of domestic violence, when we see those two things happening at the same time, we see increased lethality and increased injuries. That's the connection there. It's really important that we shift our perspective about why and how people come to this place. And we stop asking questions about why they can't leave and start asking questions about why people who are abusing other people are doing that. Why are they harming them and placing the blame where it belongs? Because the longer that time goes on and the more abuse that happens, it always escalates. So it's important that everyone is able to identify what healthy relationships are. And for people who are in unhealthy relationships that can't leave, that we ensure that they have access to safety and that all of us know what resources we can access.
There are a lot of different resources out there. Locally here in Dillingham, we have SAFE. There's also the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which has a lot of information. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is also available for folks to call. What can people expect when they access these resources, and what does that process look like?
So let's say that you yourself are somebody who is experiencing this type of harm. First of all, I want you to know that there's nothing that you could have ever done to deserve this. Nothing. That it is not your fault at all. And whatever your life looks like, there is life on the other side of this. So however low you feel, however hopeless or helpless or powerless you feel, then your sense of identity, all those things, they do come back. They come back. It can be really difficult to imagine what it would look like to be free, especially if we've tried to leave many times. Or I think what's really difficult for people to understand is when you deeply love someone and your life is so interconnected with them and they harm you, it's not something that our brain can even fathom. For myself and for a lot of survivors, it actually becomes compartmentalized that you have this life with them and then there's also this harm. Our brain cannot bring them together. Like, it's a really deeply confusing thing, especially if there's mental abuse, anybody who has a mental health issue, or anybody who has survived trauma. So being physically harmed, being emotionally harmed is a type of trauma. And that leads to all kinds of really confusing ways that our brain and our bodies keep us alive. And yeah, one of those is disassociating or being in denial. So if you are encountering somebody and it's very clear to you that they're in a place that they're not safe, but they're not acknowledging it, just know that that's a type of protection. If you are somebody who's experiencing this, I want you to know that there are really incredible people who will work with you. And if you want to know what the help looks like, I want to walk you through that. So you're going to get on the phone with somebody through this hotline, through your local SAFE, an advocate, and they're going to listen. And it's completely confidential. And an advocate is a person who, by law, has very similar confidentiality as attorney-client privileges. If I'm your advocate and you call me, I can't be subpoenaed. I can't tell anybody about anything that we've talked about. And this is really important for our rural communities where everybody knows everybody. We need to know that we're going to be safe. We need to be able to build trust because our lives literally depend on it. So let's say you call me. I'm going to walk you through who I am and what my role is for you. I'm going to ask you if you're safe in the moment, and I'm going to get an idea of your situation. I want to know really the chances of lethality. So I'm going to ask you a lot of different questions, and I'm using he because we see a lot more violence against women. And that's, you know, that's a whole other conversation. We also see a lot more violence against Alaska Native people. And that's a whole other conversation. But for this purpose, I'm going to be using those pronouns. I'm going to ask questions like, has he ever bit you? Has he ever strangled you? I'm going to be asking if he's ever harmed animals. All of those things lead to higher lethality, lead to a higher chance of being murdered. So I'm going to ask you those kind of questions, and I'm going to get an idea of how safe you are, what resources you have in your house, if he has access to your phone, if he has access to your email, if he has access to your other relationships, and also what you want to do. What are you wanting to do? Are you wanting to leave? We know that for people who are in these relationships, it takes about an average of 9 times for people to try and leave, unless you have a disability. And that includes substance use and mental health. That means that we say we are going to leave and then they convince us to come back, or they bring us back and it isn't safe and us to leave. Or we're still holding hope that they could make changes, that they are going to get help in one way or another, or, you know, they promise to do things differently. And that is a cycle that we see. And I might walk you through that cycle. I might go over the power and control wheel, where I list off all the different ways that harm can be caused in a relationship. So I'll name financial abuse and all the different ways. Does he have control of the bank account, of the credit cards? Emotional abuse, you know, we talked about that early on. Does he put you down? Does he embarrass you? You know, is there a lot of yelling? Is there a lot of manipulation? I'll go over coercion. I'll talk about substance use. I need to know if substance use is a part of this, because it helps me understand if you need Narcan. I want you to be safe in so many different ways, not just in this relationship, but also if that's something that you're struggling with, then we've got to talk about that. I want you to know that there's no judgment here at all. Like, my job is to keep you alive. My job is that you feel empowered, that you have somebody that you can talk to, that you trust, that is not ever going to tell anything about your situation. Then we'll get to creating a plan. So if there is violence and you can't leave, you know, then we want to know if there's firearms in the house. I'll talk to you about how to protect your head and your face. So curling up into a ball in the corner so that your limbs are protecting your head and your face in the event that you can't leave, in the event that things escalate. How do you protect your children? And then also what the laws are. So if you can't get out, but there are children there, then you face a likelihood of protective services coming in, removing the children. I have access to information, and I want to make sure that you are well aware of everything and that you know what your resources are, and together we'll make a plan that fits you where you're at. And it's through those options and those resources that people really feel empowered. This is something that anybody can do at any time. So I'm trained. There's lots of other advocates locally and nationally that are trained in this. This is something that all loved ones can do, that we really practice listening to people and not being judgmental, and knowing that the first person that people tell is so important, that people stay in these relationships because of shame, because of isolation. And that's how we break it. We break shame by being the kind of people that people can trust.